Today on Uncommon Stories, we will get ready for our trip, buy our ticket, get settled in our seat or cabin for an overnight trip, and find out how one of the best ways to travel and to transport goods came to be. The train! We'll also see where the suitcase we take on our trips came from. So store that suitcase in a safe place, grab a cool drink, sit back, and enjoy the ride. Riding down the tracks on a sunny day, watching the world go by on an old-fashioned steam train is a sentimental feeling virtually unmatched. Trains were the catalyst that drove industrial revolutions in many countries around the world. It further connected people and countries like never before. And we can thank the invention of the train for many other inventions, systems, and businesses that are still in use today. On that note, can you name the system that the U.S. adopted to keep train schedules correct once trains became a popular form of transportation? Hint, other countries were using this system long before the U.S. joined in. So it was a long time coming. Think about it, and we'll see if you're right at the end of our story. The first known constructed trackways are the Post Track, a prehistoric causeway in Somerset Levels, England, dating back to 3,838 BC. It seems these tracks, which were made of wood, were built as a means for builders to construct another pathway, the Sweet Track, finished some 30 years later, also built of wood. The Sweet Track was used as a walkway through the marshlands where prehistoric groups used the wetlands to fish and hunt water birds during the winter, and raise cattle and sheep and gather timber for construction during the spring and summer. As these two pathways were built for pedestrians, tracks for carts, wagons, and eventually trains were still to come. When you think of trains, you probably think of a metal passenger train you may have ridden, or a cargo train with flatbed cars hauling goods down the tracks that we occasionally have to stop for as they pass over the road we're on. Or even still, you might think about an old steam engine train at a park that you ride from one end to the other. As those are the common trains for us today, train systems began over 2,000 years ago in Egypt, Babylon, and Greece, and were nothing like what we use today. These countries had well-established trade industries, from crops to building materials to raw materials. Egyptians, Babylonians, and Greeks sold goods to Europe and the Middle and Near East around 600 BC. Once their clients bought the goods, they needed to deliver them, and the quicker, the better. Horse and cart were what they used mainly, but it became evident that it was slow going taking these carts over rocky and rough roads. So to make the trek easier, ancient travelers built stone-grooved pathways for wheels of their carts to fit in and be pulled more easily by the horses or sometimes bulls. The animals didn't have to expend as much energy, thanks to the pathways, and the trip was much easier and faster. These early stone paths were the first railway tracks, and remains of them can be found in Italy and Greece. After the fall of Rome, unfortunately, these pathways went out of use, and it wasn't until the increased trading of the European Renaissance and the early industrial age that pathways gained popularity again. Trading was now a big business all over Europe and the Middle East, so tracks for horse-drawn carriages, larger than earlier models, were a huge upgrade in transporting goods. Just like their prehistoric counterparts in the marshes of Somerset Level, England, Europeans began to build wagonways of wood for horse-drawn carts to transport ore from mines in the 1500s. Later that century, a mile-and-a-half wagonway was built to carry coal out of a mine to a terminal for pickup. And sometime between 1600 and 1604, the first cable-driven railway was built from a coal mine to a river, so coal and raw materials could be carried to riverside towns. Roughly 100 years later, in 1758, the Middleton Railway was built in Leeds, West Yorkshire, England, and is the world's oldest operational railway. Not long after, in 1764, a railway in America was built in Lewiston, New York. Once mining became a popular system to gather raw materials and the fuels to run newly established factories, producing textiles, ironworks, and machine tools in the late 1700s, new metal tracks were created to transport these materials. Horses still pulled carts, but the smoother tracks made it even easier to transport materials from the mine to the factory. This period was also when a railway was built that carried passengers, as well as goods, in 1796. The Lake Lock Railroad in West Yorkshire, England. Its primary purpose was to carry coal, but it also carried passengers to give it the distinction of the first public railway. Even though this railroad carried passengers, railway systems were still considered a transportation for goods. It would take a few more years for the industry to be a mode of transportation for people. The two inventions that took railroads to the next level were steam-powered engines and steel. Steam-powered engines revolutionized industry for the day, and it overhauled railroads and took it into the future. And all of the industries and railroads and future industries can thank ironmonger and Baptist preacher Thomas Newcomen, an English inventor who created the atmospheric engine, better known as the steam engine, in 1712. The science behind the engine is fairly simple. Heat water to produce steam, creating a partial vacuum that pushes a piston attached to a rotating arm that drives a pulley on the other end of the arm. This pulley can be attached to different tools to do work. This was the first practical device to harness steam to produce mechanical work, and it was one of the greatest inventions of its time. And it is the invention that inspired the world for future generations to create engines and motors that drive industry. Newcomen's steam engine was used to pump water out of mines, and hundreds were constructed and used throughout Europe. But this was just the beginning for steam engines. Scottish engineer and inventor James Watt improved on Newcomen's steam engine and developed the Watt steam engine, also known as the reciprocating engine, or piston engine, in 1769. And Watt's engine was used to power cotton mills and a variety of machinery, but it was a large stationary engine, so more improvement needed to be made for the steam engine to push, or actually pull, the railroad into the future. Along with one of his employees, William Murdoch, Watt continued to build on his first steam engine, and in 1784 he designed a steam locomotive. With a separate condenser and an air pump, the steam engine was small enough to fit on a train car, and William Murdoch took Watts's new engine and built the first steam locomotive. The race to produce steam locomotives for commercial use was on, and in 1884, Richard Trevithick built the first full-scale steam locomotive. And in February of that year, the world's first steam-powered railway journey took place as Trevithick's steam locomotive hauled a train along the tramway of the Penydarren Ironworks. Soon after, Matthew Murray, an English machine tool manufacturer, built the famous Salamanca locomotive, the first commercially successful steam locomotive in 1812. The following year, Christopher Blackett and William Headley of the Wylam Colliery Railway built Puffing Billy, the first locomotive running by adhesion, which is the friction of the drive wheel and the rail, by distributing weight between a number of wheels. Puffing Billy is on display in the Science Museum in London and is the oldest locomotive in existence. Two more pieces of the steam puzzle were needed to make railroads the present means of transportation, instead of the future means of transportation, and they were provided by George and Robert Stephenson, who in 1814 built Bulcher steam locomotive that used flanged wheels to basically lock a train onto the tracks. And in 1825, they built Locomotion. And I'm not talking about the song. Locomotion was used on the Stockton and Darlington Railway in northeast England and was the first public steam railway in the world. And finally, in 1829, George and Robert built Rocket, which won the all-important Rainhill Trials. This was a race to see what type of engine the newly completed Liverpool and Manchester Railway would use. Stephenson's Rocket destroyed the competition, proving that locomotive engines were superior for powering trains over the stationary steam engines. which required cables to pull trains across the tracks. Surprisingly enough, the directors of the railroad were planning on using stationary steam engines before Rocket beat the competition at the trials. Locomotives with steam engines and flange wheels are now in place to move goods, people, and the world of industry wherever the tracks will take them. And that leads us to the tracks. The heavier locomotives pulling longer trains of cars needed sturdier tracks. The cast iron tracks used for horse-drawn carts were not going to cut it. It took roughly 30 more years, but finally, in the 1860s, steel tracks were created, and they lasted several times longer than iron. However, they would still become brittle with age. Improvements needed to be made. So, in 1865, French engineer Pierre-Emile Martin took out a license from Carl Wilhelm Siemens, who earlier had invented the open hearth, a regenerative furnace, a system of heating crude iron that burns out excess carbon and other impurities. This system was a major breakthrough and moved many industries forward, not just the railroad industry. The Siemens-Martin process to produce steel was used for over an impressive 100 years. But by 1990, the last of the open hearth furnaces was shut down, and the basic oxygen and electric arc furnace took its place. With tough steel tracks laid down and locomotive steam engines hauling train cars, trains pull us into the Industrial Revolution and take people to lands and destinations only once were heard about. Electric-powered trains and the diesel-powered trains would eventually take over steam engine trains, but thanks to steam engines, we have the amazing train today that continues to move industries and people everywhere. So, trains are running, and we have somewhere to go, but we have some things we need to take with us. What do we do with these things? We need a suitcase. When horses, wagons, and walking were the only option for traveling, most people opted not to travel. If you had a wagon, you put your stuff in the back of the wagon. Didn't matter if it was packed up, as your stuff was the only thing in the wagon. Now, once public transportation became available, say stagecoaches pulled by a team of horses, it was time to find something to put your stuff in, to secure it. And one of the first things created to do that was the trunk. Most were made of wood or leather with a heavy iron base. And when boats were available to travel down the river, waterproof trunks were used that were covered with canvas or tree sap. With the invention of the steam engine, steamboats and steam engine trains gave people more options to travel. So people started traveling more, and more trunks were made. But traveling cost money. So the wealthy were the ones that did most of the traveling to start with, and they could afford servants to carry their heavy trunks when they traveled. Like most inventions, the price to ride on a train or a boat finally came down, and more people started to travel. And they say necessity is the mother of invention, and people needed to carry some belongings when they traveled. So at the end of the 19th century, the first suitcases were created. Funny thing though, suitcases were exactly what they were called. Cases to carry suits. They were typically equipped with a sleeve for shirts, and some had little hat boxes inside. By the time the 20th century rolled around, there were many styles of dress suit cases to choose from. Large steamer trunks, an upgrade from earlier trunks, club bags, even portable wardrobes were available. This was the boom for the baggage business. New styles and types of suitcases were created each time a new mode of transportation was developed. So while new forms of transportation moved goods and passengers, it would move the suitcase industry as well. In the early years, suitcases, or luggage, was a small version of the trunk. The latches and locks were a little smaller, and the handles on the shorter sides became one handle on one of the longer sides. Now it took just one person to carry. They were still made with sturdy material, leather, wicker, or thick rubbery cloth that was stretched over wood or steel frames. So they weren't the lightest thing to carry, but they did the job, and they worked well for public transportation. But when automobiles were introduced, things changed. People didn't need to worry about their suitcases being put somewhere with other people's. The government even got in on the use of luggage, when in 1933, Hugh S. Johnson, an administrator in the National Recovery Administration, sent a business report to President Franklin Roosevelt stating, "With the increase in the use of automobiles, it has become easy to utilize simple cardboard containers secured at little or no cost in the back of the automobile in lieu of luggage." Well, the suitcase industry wasn't going to just pack up and leave. They fought fire with fire and created lighter and cheaper versions made with cardboard and plastic, advertising them as made with modern materials for your convenience. By the 1960s, more durable plastic replaced cardboard, and the square box-like suitcase gave way to rounded edges. They were still a little bulky, but people could carry more things in a lighter suitcase. But one more transportation development would force the suitcase industry to change yet again. Airplane travel had increased from 17 million passengers in 1949 to 172 million in 1969. And air travel meant walking large terminals. Train terminals had become larger as well during this time. So, in 1970, Bernard Sato patented a design for a suitcase with wheels. A wheeled trunk was created in 1887 and wheeled suitcases in 1945. But surprisingly, those models didn't catch on. And since cargo space on passenger planes is smaller than on trains and boats, suitcases again became smaller, with synthetic fabrics stretched over alloy frames. Zippers replaced clasps, and since you need some things during a flight, or a bus or a train trip, carry-on sized luggage was introduced. A little later on, in 1987, the wheeled rollerboard bag with a collapsible handle was introduced. And since then, just about every piece of luggage is created that way. The 2000s have seen lighter models developed to comply with weight restrictions for planes, and more suitcases are made vertical instead of horizontal due to the four wheels that come on most models. And I have no doubt, as transportation changes and needs of travelers change, the suitcase will change with them. You don't think about your suitcase much when traveling, but when you have to haul your stuff from one place to another, you sure are glad when you have a nice one. Before we get to the answer to our question regarding what system the U.S. adopted to keep trains on schedule, let's look at a couple of other things railroads have brought us besides a form of transportation. We can thank the invention of trains for the term we use to signify how much power an engine has. As mentioned earlier, James Watt was a driving force behind the steam engine. But when he was marketing his new invention, he calculated how much power a single horse working in a mill could produce over a period of time to compare it to his engine. Although many scientists believe his estimates were far too high, Watt came up with a figure that indicated how many horses just one of his engines could replace, and measuring how much power his engine had. And he called this new measurement horsepower. We can also thank the train industry for another industry many travelers use on a regular basis. In 1841, Englishman Thomas Cook, a Baptist minister, organized a train trip for 540 parishioners to attend a meeting in London. He negotiated ticket prices and meal prices for the travelers, and it was a huge hit. Soon, Cook, the minister, was arranging trips for train travelers all over England. And thus, the first travel agency was underway. Now to our question. What system did the U.S. adopt to manage the schedules of its newly formed railways? Europe had established this system in 1847. It took the U.S. a little longer. But finally, on November 18, 1883, the U.S. Naval Observatory sent out a telegraph signal marking 12 p.m. Eastern Time. And standardized time zones had officially begun. Well, there we have it. I hope you've enjoyed this edition of Uncommon Stories. And come back next time to listen to more interesting, surprising, thought-provoking, and entertaining stories that are true, but probably are just uncommon. I'm Brad Greer for Uncommon Stories, wishing everyone a wonderful week, and thanks for listening.